Hi there, can I help you? You're looking for something for the garden?
Well, I want to plant
what
for my...
What she wants is a nice lay landy hedge, am I right?
No, well...
And a lovely big hot tub.
Your vote is your voice, so don't let someone else decide for you.
Oh, and a pair of those crouching stone lions, they'd look great either side of your front door.
Do I know you?
That's our new trainee. He's very keen.
Make sure you're registered to vote. Go to checktheregister.ie and be a voter so that it's your voice that's heard. From Am Comisiún Toghcháin, Ireland's Independent Electoral Commission.
And would you like that for delivery?
Yeah. Apartment 3, 6th floor.
Oh, you're going to need a crane for those lions then.
Yeah, having my head shoved into the steps of the Ulster Bank in Ranelagh. Cold butt of a gun put into the back of your skull. That's a moment where you go, okay, yeah, I think this one's up.
How does a high-flying academic become one of Ireland's most prolific bank robbers?
What I would see as the most important part of this still lies open.
I'm Not Here to Hurt You, a brand new series from the award-winning team behind the Indo Daily.
That November day, that's where it all begins.
Out now, wherever you get your podcasts. This is an Irish independent podcast.
I thought they were brave, even with the kind of Stormers' kind of fairly hard up defence. I thought they'd playmate. They trusted themselves to be able to find holes and to find gaps, and they did that consistently. And I was so pleased. I thought they were way the better team in the semi-final and the final. I suppose the key thing for them now is to try and figure out how they put teams away a little bit more clinically. That'll be the next step forward if they're talking about Heineken Cups, and I think they should be. I always think Munster should be, but, you know, I wouldn't have said that at the start of the season, to be honest.
Munster are champions once again after claiming the URC title in dramatic fashion against the Stormers in Cape Town last weekend. It capped a sensational turnaround for Graham Rowntree's men after Munster were left scrambling for Champions Cup qualification as recently as 6 weeks ago. Three away knockout wins later, and instead the 12-year trophy drought is finally over. Welcome to the Left Wing Podcast. Sadly, this is our last show of the season, but between Munster's big win and today's announcement of the Ireland World Cup training squad, we have plenty to discuss. Will Slattery here with you. I'm delighted to be joined by Keane Tracy and Luke Fitzgerald. And Keane, I'll go to you first. You know, we've had you on for plenty of Munster postmortems over the years since we've had this podcast. Most of them have been pretty grim. Today, you get to come on and bask in, I suppose, Munster's victory, a great win over the Stormers in South Africa to do it the way they did it with all those away games. Getting that late try and having the great scenes in Thomond Park at the homecoming. How would you sum up the last few days for Munster as a province?
Obviously been brilliant. I mean, from a Munster point of view, Will, you're right. Yeah, like we've done so many postmortems. So much has been written and said over the years. And, you know, you got to give credit where credit's due. And they did it the hard way. Like you said, you hear Graham Rowntree touching on it, that it probably won't be done again in terms of finishing off the season with six games on the road. But we reference this in terms of Leinster in going into the Champions Cup final. But Munster were really battle hardened towards the end of the season, because their backs were to the wall. They had no choice really but to play their first team, and they reaped the rewards for that. So it's been brilliant. It's brilliant for Irish rugby as a whole. I mean, it's good for business. We need all of the provinces to be strong. You can imagine that what this is going to do for the likes of Leinster now going into next season. I think it really stokes up the rivalry, which is no bad thing. I think there was a bit of doom and gloom, I'd say, after Leinster lost the Champions Cup final, and, you know, we were talking about it as well. What does it mean? Does it mean anything for Ireland's World Cup hopes? And then a week later, you have Munster winning a URC title against all the odds, you'd have to say. So it's a huge boost for Ireland when they go into camp. I think that Munster are now going in there in the back of winning a trophy as well. And there was just so much to like, I think, about the performance. There was so much to like about what they've done over the last few weeks. You mentioned the homecoming wheel that they had in Thomond Park on Monday, and like it looked like the good old days of Munster rugby, and it's just brilliant to see. You can see that the connection is back now with the supporters and the fans. I don't think it had totally gone away, but I do think it had been damaged slightly over the last couple of years. I think Munster fans are most of them anyway are pretty realistic in terms of their expectations, but it wasn't just that they weren't winning silverware for the last few years. It was the style of rugby that they were playing it with. It's just been a total transformation this season in terms of the game plan, like the attack under Mike Prendergast. It's just night and day compared to what they were playing last season. The defence under Dennis Leamy has really, really come on. And the young players, which I think is a massive, massive part of this success, it's something that I've been writing about over the last few days, that, you know, you have your Peter O'Mahony's, your Connor Murray's, your Keith Earls and Stephen Archer's, and it's absolutely brilliant to see them, you know, getting their hands on another medal. I know not all of them had a prominent role to play in 2011 when they last won the Celtic League or whatever it was back then, but you just have this infusion of youth. And I've been banging this drum throughout the whole season that it's been the big kind of sea change. It's changed the culture behind the scenes, that no one is undroppable in that Munster squad. And that was definitely the case over the last couple of years, where it didn't really matter how well you were playing. If you were an Ireland international, you were going to be starting. So you get guys like Mike Haley, I know he's not exactly the youngest, but like Calvin Nash, Shane Daly, Dermot Barron, all these kind of guys, Craig Casey, like they've been really, really important to Munster's success. And the age profile of them is really encouraging as well. So that makes me think that there's plenty more to come from this squad going forward. This doesn't feel like the end point of a really long and arduous journey. Like, I mean, it's only year one of the Graham Rowntree project as well, which is just gives, I think, Munster supporters so much hope and belief going forward. So before we get kind of stuck into the game itself, Will, I think that's the bigger picture stuff. I mean, you see the scenes, the amount of young people that were in Thomen Park on Monday night, and I don't think you can underestimate how important that is. I mean, Limerick rugby hasn't been as strong as it used to be over the years recently, and there's lots of different factors for that, but you look at how strong the Limerick hurlers have been over the last few years, and that's been the attractive sport, I think, for a lot of young people growing up, because they can see success. And young people are pretty impressionable, you know, if they see Cian Lynch or Garrod Hegarty, whoever, you know, winning All-Ireland titles with Limerick, they want a piece of that. Whereas now, when you see homegrown Munster guys lifting the URC trophy last weekend and bringing it back to Thomond Park, I think it's going to do wonders, Will, for the whole province, just to lift the mood and to say that, you know, Munster are back kind of where they belong. And now that, like, next season, they need to back it up, I think, but they're already talking about targeting the Heineken Cup. It'll be interesting to see, you know, they've obviously going to get a good seeding on the back of being URC champions. So it's all rosy in the garden, Will. And I think, yeah, we have to give them absolutely immense credit, because I think from the top down, they've really put proper systems in place now in terms of the coaching staff, like guys like Ian Costello behind the scenes, Garrod Prendergast, Mike Prendergast's brother is coming in next season to take over the academy. So they've got a lot of good guys on board there, which bodes well, I think.
Yeah, look, there's so much to kink over there in terms of the positives, and like even the manner in which Munster finally won that trophy, like going to South Africa, playing the rugby they played, should have won by more. Similar story to the Leinster semi-final, probably played like the vast majority of the rugby, created a lot of chances, showed really good ambition, and that's what's almost as pleasing. Like, again, I would, even if they had come up just short, I still would have been like really enthused about how they were playing, what they were trying to do. Now, obviously, winning is a huge bonus and the ultimate, but it's the manner in which they kind of went about their business this season as it progressed is what's almost as impressive to me, is ending the drought. They're actually playing really good stuff now that people want to watch. And obviously, that was a real bugbear of the last couple of years. Not only were they not winning, but they were playing a style that, like, people were struggling to get behind.
I actually took a different tint on it. I think, yes, the young players have been important for them. But if you think about the last couple of weeks and who actually played well for them and who stood up, I actually thought it was the senior players, weirdly enough. I thought Peter O'Mahony's been unbelievably consistent. I thought Conor Murray has been resurgent. I thought Fekitoa was brilliant towards the end of the season. And he would have been one of their senior kind of players, like their kind of stars. I thought Stephen Archer, Stephen Archer, Ty Byrne, these guys, I thought they were the kind of key to turn this around. And then you added in a few of those little bits of youth, your Crowleys, your Nashes, your Barons, these guys. Hodnett was good, I thought, as well on the weekend. I thought it was kind of the senior guys that kind of wove it all together, you know, trusted in the game plan, backed themselves, and they went out to play rugby, and they were aggressive, and they were I just thought they were brilliant. I was so pleased with them the last couple of weeks. But I thought the senior guys were the real surprise factor for me, Will. And I thought that was the key difference for them. I thought Klein was brilliant as well. We'll go to the Irish squad. I think he's really unlucky not to get in there. Yeah, I was just so pleased with them. And I think you're right. I think to touch on your question, I just thought like, if you think about how stingy they were defensively, having had a little bit of a blip just before the kind of qualifications or the kind of those key matches in South Africa where they conceded 100 points over two games, it was perfect timing for that. It seemed to just refocus the minds in that area, and they were really, really stingy. I mean, they only made 90 tackles, but their tackle percentage was still way higher than the Stormers. It was 91%, I think, which is a great stat, particularly when you're making less tackles. They had 60% possession as well, and I thought they were good with the ball, weren't they? I thought the forwards were excellent. I thought the decision making, I thought they were brave, even with the kind of Stormers kind of fairly hard up defense. I thought they trusted themselves to be able to find holes and to find gaps, and they did that consistently, and I was so pleased. I thought they were way the better team in the semi-final and the final. I suppose the key thing for them now is to try and figure out how they put teams away a little bit more clinically. That'll be the next step forward if they're talking about Heineken Cups, and I think they should be. I always think Munster should be, but you know, I wouldn't have said that at the start of the season, to be honest. But I think that's the next step for them. What I liked is that, you know, if you compare them to the other two provinces that looked a little bit toothless at times when they got into the 22, and Munster looked a little bit like that too versus Leinster, who looked so dangerous in there. You know, Munster had the grit versus the other two to stick it out when the going got tough. They were able to rely on that kind of, you know, they always talk about defense wins championships, and I still think that was the big bedrock on which the success was built on. But you had to marry that with a bit of, they had to have the ball. I thought they owned that. I thought their work at the breakdown and their physicality and the tackle, and I thought they were way more accurate as well. I thought versus Leinster, say, who I thought were a little bit wild and they were off the line kind of as hard as Leinster, I just thought Munster were a little bit more relaxed and composed in the tackle, and they completed way more, which is very evident when you look at their tackle completion percentage as well. And Cian, I don't know if you any thoughts on any of that, but to tie off the point, I was so pleased with them. And I talked the last couple of weeks about Leinster and the worry I had about, you know, obviously I'm a Leinster supporter. I have to be unbiased when I'm talking about them here, but I think you never give a team you play your best team in knockout rugby. And I think Cian's absolutely right about the impact this will have down the line, seeing the little bit of success, what that breeds into the support, the fan base, but also into the actual team itself and the belief they got. And they looked battle hardened towards the end. And they looked far the better team. It was a brilliant performance, and I was so pleased for so many big characters to get some silverware eventually. I think that's been long overdue for players who are too good to have gone through a whole career without getting some a trophy in their hands. So brilliant stuff.
Yeah, it's teed up so nicely for next season as well. As Cian mentioned, that Champions Cup draw, they're going to be a top seeding. And it's all about stacking, you know, wins early in the pool stages and getting those home games in the knockout stages. That's why Leinster have been so good at getting to the latter stages, because they're good in the pool stages with good draws. Munster will have that now, and we'll touch on it later. But the World Cup training squad, the only positive, I suppose, of Munster not having as many players as they would like is that they'll have more time in pre-season to layer their attack more, to build on the game plan that they've implemented this season. And as you mentioned, like, not putting away all those chances in the semi-final and final. You've won a trophy, but you're kind of coming away thinking, there's so much room for growth here. Like, if we had actually nailed our execution, we could have been even better. So all of a sudden, it looks, you know, really, really rosy, as Cian mentioned, going into next season. Cian, anything that Luke said that you want to pick up on?
I suppose the point I was making about the young players was it was the blend between the two. There's no doubt that the experience their role, but I just thought that the trust in the youth and having that blend, it was just such a nice blend. And that's what happened throughout the season. There was no sense of these young players being thrown into the deep end going to Cape Town for a final, because they'd been playing all along in the big games over the course of the season. So that hadn't happened in the past, and I think it created a bit of complacency, I think, within the squad, whereas now people genuinely believe that they're fighting for their places every week. You know, they've gone through the whole rigmarole of changing the way they've trained, and they've been saying it, you know, banging the drum all season about how they're training faster. But I think you can see that in terms of how they're playing and also their fitness levels. Their fitness levels at the weekend again were really, really impressive. I thought the defense was outstanding, and I thought there was just so many like key moments, I thought, throughout the game. Obviously they threw Anton Frisch throws the intercept and Manny Libok goes to half the pitch and scores a try, totally against the run of play. Munster were playing all the rugby, but Jack Crowley's kick to the corner, I mean, to eke out every last centimeter in that was just outstanding. And then Munster mauled the Stormers and they end up conceding a penalty. I thought that was a massive psychological win because it allowed them to kick the ball back into the corner and then they score a try. So that's two maul successes you get in an area of the game that the South Africans pride themselves on. So I thought that was a massive, massive psychological win.
The big chase was impressive, Keane, as well, wasn't it? Do you know what I thought was really, when you talk about the fitness, and just to tie in with your point, I hope I'm not interrupting you too badly in train of thought, but just to maybe a penny for your thoughts on, do you remember I think it was a turnover, and I think in the 22, I can't remember what minute it was, but there had been a really long passage of play, very open, and Munster kind of kicked it through. I don't know whether it was Nash or someone kicked it through from inside the 22, and Tyburn, the pumping the legs up the pitch. But even though he was doing that, and he'd been pushing and shoving big South African bodies for whoever it was, I'm going to say it was around the 60, 65 minutes or so when the game was in the balance, chasing down, I think it might have been Libok he chased down, and ended up kind of the ball squirting loose. I think he might have made another tackle, but I think Stephen Archer was maybe the next guy up, or he was very close to maybe the third or fourth guy there.
Jeremy Lockman was there as well, I think, the two.
Like, it was just, that was what I thought was, you talk about the fitness levels and the battle-hardened kind of nature of this, of qualifying rugby. I talked about this a couple of weeks ago. It's so important, but that's definitely played a part in it. That match fitness, like, there's nothing that can kind of replicate that kind of 3 or 4 minutes of defending close to your line under pressure, and then all of a sudden you are doing a 50-meter dash, like chasing a couple of backs, and it was sure, awful.
Look at Gavin Coombs' block that led to the crucial try. Like, that's at the 74th, 75th minute at the end, and he got through, as he always does, an absolute mountain of work. So that's just an illustration, I think, of how, because obviously, you know, we don't get to see what's going on behind closed doors in training, but I think that's an illustration of the fact that they have been playing differently, they are training differently, they have been training at a higher tempo because that's the game plan that they wanted to play. But one other quick point in terms of the defense, which I thought was massive, was just before half time that Munster saw out that kind of mini period of pressure, because I was actually kind of thinking back to the Champions Cup final, the Leinster La Rochelle game, when La Rochelle scored that try before half time. And I know they only go in 8 points down, but like, that was a big, big win for them. And I think if the Stormers had scored just before half time, it could potentially have been a different game. And you touched on Jean Klein there earlier, Luke, and he was at the thick of that, spoiling the maul. He was just outstanding again. Like, he's been brilliant this season. But I think that was another big, big win. So all these little psychological wins, I think, will add up, and that's ultimately what happened. Because even when the Stormers scored their try after half time and Mike Haley's in the bin, you're kind of thinking, okay, this could start getting really tricky now. But Munster hung in there, and the manner of the try that they scored, like, I mean, I know it's been said a couple of times, but I was looking back and it's straight after the game, and 14 of the 15 players, Munster players on the pitch, touched the ball, some of them several times. And to you know, I was about to say the dreaded phrase, trust the process. So I'm going to give myself lines for that after the podcast. For Munster, though, not to have retreated into their shells when the pressure was on, and actually to have trusted everything that they've done across the course of the season, I thought was unbelievably pleasing. I can't imagine how satisfying that must be from Mike Prendergast's point of view, Graham Rowntree's point of view. They stuck with it and they ran through multiple phases. Like, the ball and play time was, I think, nearly 3 minutes for it. And like I said, 14 of 15 players touching the ball, and players being comfortable at that stage to throw, like, they threw a couple of offloads in it and they got the just reward. And then the man of the moment, Jack Crowley, steps up and kicks over a touchline conversion as if, you know, he was down in Bandon, you know, kicking on a Sunday morning. Like, that was such an important kick as well, because it meant that the Stormers needed a converted try to win.
The Crossfield kick and everything, like, he was so good, wasn't he? Like, he's so brave. Like, I just felt like there was never a point in the game where, as a young player, I was thinking, sometimes in a final, they don't want the ball. He looked like he wanted the ball every single time. Like, he believes he's the guy that's going to make something happen every single time. And do you know what he has? He looks like he believes that, but he also looks like he's able to understand that he doesn't need to do that every time. I thought his decision-making was excellent on the weekend. If you think about how many times he demanded the ball, but also how many times he played the simple front door option on those. Do you know when you have, the temptation is when you have a little bit of time to continue to throw the ball out the back. His guys, he used his soldiers, those front eight guys. Like, Johnny Sexton does this so, so well as well. That little dump, that you know, you throw the eyes out to the runner out the back, but then you just throw to the guy taking the short line off. He did that all day. He threw a few guys, as a quarterback sometimes has to do, into a big tackle with a guy who was ready for them. But there was a couple of times where they eked out an extra yard and they just kept the Stormers just a little bit on the back foot, just a little bit hesitant, having to respect the guy who was taking the short line off the ball player all day. It's a brave thing to do. You need guys around to believe in you, to continue to take that and to be brave. It was a team effort, but I thought Crowley, specifically to me, was brave all day, and you need that. You just need that from your out half. You know,
he has that triple threat, Luke, doesn't he, in terms of the kick, pass, and the run he has.
And he's got the run game too, which is very important. And let's not forget, and people hate, I think, when I say this, but his defense. It's so important that you don't have a weakness in your defense. How nice is it to just be snug in there with that 10-12? Like, Fekitoa came into his own completely in the second half of the season. He looked like a different player. I know you said there seemed to be a lot on his shoulders at the start of the year. I know what that was. There was some incident at home in Tonga, wasn't there? And he was quite involved in that. And I don't know if the pressure of all those kind of things maybe made his start to a Munster, and plus as well, new management, etc. I'm sure there was lots of things.
He'd been away with Tonga as well, I think, and he missed the start of Munster preseason.
He just looked a little bit interrupted, did not look himself. Whereas I thought to the second half of the season, it's a shame to see him go now, because
he's been sensational the last year.
He's been, his physicality,
people, like, you know, yeah, he's running over people, he's smashing them, like he's been playing like he did with the All Blacks.
He put in on Dion.
Oh, how nice is it when you see a guy going down winded? There is no nicer feeling. And when you hear the ooh, you know, you can hear there's a little sound always. It is such a pleasant feeling, and it'll give all the guys around you lift. And plus, I couldn't believe, like, it must have been a serious hit, because in South Africa, generally, if you don't, you normally just get up and just, you know, mooch away somewhere and just try and stay out of the game for a little bit. He couldn't get back up, and he's a hardy book, that lad. So it must have been an absolute peach of a hit. So himself and Frisch, I thought, like, you know, I mentioned it last week about, you know, Henshaw and Ringrose, you know, you need a good centre partnership. It's so, so important, because they are kind of generally the guys who are marshalling the end of that line. And they're the guys who are kind of talking to the middle of the line and kind of generally getting them to put pressure on the opposition and be brave. You have certainty about what's outside you, makes your job an awful lot easier. So those guys were kind of key to me. Plus, they were so physical. I mean, they were burying guys the last couple of weeks. So they were also a key part. I mean, look, everything sounds like it's a key part now, but there generally was a lot of heroes on the pitch. And I think they'll be sorry to see him go now. Whereas I think maybe at a point this season, they were like, Jesus, like, we're probably paying him 253 or whatever, 100. And it's probably a big part of the wage bill. And you're kind of thinking, you know, we haven't really seen much for that. But at the end of the season, wow, I thought he really earned his keep, and he was a key component, and he really stood up. He looked like an All Black, I thought, at the end of the season, and was a very, very important little cog in the Munster wheel. So, yeah, interesting to see now how the replacements do. That looks like, actually, at the time, that looked like a good decision to let that go, or to let him go. But now you're kind of thinking, oh, geez, I wonder, could you keep him? But we'll see. Big shoes, big. It's all of a sudden, it's big boots to fill. Whereas really, you were thinking, oh, let's get some new blood in there and try something else.
Yeah, worth paying tribute to Tadhg Byrne as well, coming back in from injury. I think his three games he's played were the three knockout games. I think he started all three. He was brilliant as well, especially after missing, you know, the second half of the Grand Slam campaign, to get back and to kind of propel them to a trophy. you know, I know, Keane, you fired in a few quotes after the game, and he spoke well, saying when he first joined, he didn't think it would take this long for them to win a trophy, and he kind of got his second Pro 12 or URC after winning with the Scarlets a few years ago. You know, the Jack Crowley piece that Luke mentioned, Keane, like, how big is it going into the World Cup, do you think, for him to deliver those two performances back-to-back? Because, you know, we've been chatting on this podcast how, even though Graham Rowntree had handed him the keys, I personally hadn't felt that he was, like, you know, shooting the lights out. I thought Ben Healy was playing better than him, but these last 2 weeks he's been unbelievable. And as you mentioned, he's a triple threat, but he also has that fourth kind of intangible out half quality, the kind of that Rog, you know, there was that, you know, kind of two photos of him celebrating the drop goals. He does have that kind of swagger or that kind of mentality that, like, out top out halves, you know, often have. And great time to find it heading into this World Cup training period in the next while.
Yeah, there's a reason why, if you speak to any of the senior Ireland guys, there's a reason why they speak very highly of Jack Crowley already. He's only been in there what seems like a wet week, but he's made such a big impression. It's not easy, obviously, to go in as a young player into a pretty much a settled squad like that, but he's gone in, he's just been such a sponge. I mean, even you remember back to when he first went in, he was running the tee for Johnny Sexton. They trusted him to deliver those messages and stuff, and seemingly he's just been brilliant behind the scenes. So everything you hear has been amazing, really, and I suppose he started to back that up over the last couple of weeks. In terms of what it means for the World Cup, it's very, very interesting, I think, because I know we're going to get on to talk about the squad that Andy Farrell has picked. And you know, Andy Farrell is a very, I would say, loyal selector. I mean, if you've delivered for him in the past, he doesn't forget that. And that's been seen with a couple of guys who have made the squad. So, you know, Ross Byrne obviously featured more prominently than Jack Crowley did in the Six Nations. And I don't think that that will be forgotten about by Andy Farrell. Of course it won't be. But it's hard to ignore a guy who is in form, you'd have to say. I know there's obviously a lot of water to cross under the bridge by the time we get to the World Cup. But whenever the Ireland squad link up for the first time in 3 weeks or whatever it is, Jack Crowley's going to be bouncing in there full of confidence. So, personally, I think he has shaken up the pecking order. Whether that means he's ahead of Ross Byrne, I don't know. But I think he's absolutely posed a serious question then that probably wasn't there a few weeks ago because of how well Ross Byrne has done. So I suppose it depends what way Ireland want to go. I think I fully agree with what Luke said there when he kind of made the comparison to Johnny Sexton in terms of how flat he plays to the line and, you know, how he's really able to suck in defenders. Like, I mean, Luke kind of touched on how tough he is in a defense, but he's not afraid to take a hit as well. Like, he's like Johnny Sexton. He delays his pass to the last possible second. He took a couple of big, big shots at the weekend, but allowed those around him to be put into space. And that's the way Ireland plays. So it's going to depend on, obviously, you know, everyone hopes Johnny Sexton will be fit throughout the World Cup, but given his, you know, his injury history, there's no guarantee with that. It sounds like he's going to be back for the England warm-up game, all going well, is what they're hoping. But I mean, if you come to a World Cup pool game against South Africa or Scotland, and if Johnny Sexton isn't available, I think it's a big decision to make. Obviously, you'll have a bigger body of work to go off in terms of Ross Byrne and Jack Crowley, but I think in terms of a like-for-like replacement, Jack Crowley is more similar, I would say, than Johnny Sexton. So it's a big call. I mean, what is he, 23? He's only had a handful of caps to be going into the deep end, but everything that we've seen and we hear about him suggests that he'd be able to handle the pressure that would come with that. So I think it's going to be very, very interesting, Will. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that, you know, Jack Crowley's had a good couple of weeks and Ross Byrne maybe hasn't had his best couple of weeks, that all of a sudden means that he's the number two out half. But I think the gap is certainly narrowed, and I think it's a live debate. Absolutely, for sure, I think it's a live debate.
Yeah, and those World Cup warm-up games will be very interesting to see who gets the nod and what game time is doled out. A few more Munster things before we touch on the squad, Luke. You know, Graham Rowntree leading Munster to the trophy kind of completes the set now from that 2015 England coaching staff. Like, Andy Farrell and Mike Catt with the Grand Slam, Stuart Lancaster obviously involved in a lot of Leinster success, probably would have hoped for a few more, and now Graham Rowntree. Like, it's an astonishing kind of this rugby kind of plot line that's been unfolding. Like, if you'd gone back to 2015 and said that all these guys would end up leading all these Irish teams to big honours and big trophies, like, it's mad. Like, what they've actually done for Irish rugby is pretty staggering.
Yeah, it is. But I also think, no, I think they've been pretty good, actually, for Irish rugby. I think Lancaster certainly has benefited from what the situation in Leinster. Like, that's certainly rehabilitated his image, which was, you know, rightly or wrongly, you know, tarnished after that home World Cup in England in 15, after the exit to Wales. And I think, he's certainly like, look, I think he's always, that was an interesting one because it sounds like he was doing that director of rugby role, which it doesn't really sound like he's built for. He seems like he's more built for the day-to-day coaching kind of role. And Leinster was the perfect job for him. Roundtree, I think, was an interesting one. It didn't seem like everyone was that inspired by him taking over that role. But I remember I said to you, well, like he was on our Lions tour in 2009 as the scrum coach. And it's interesting, isn't it? Like he's just a good guy. And it's funny, if you can, the challenge for someone who's like that, a little bit like Raj, actually, who's, look, Raj has a nasty enough edge. Of course, Wig has a bit of a nasty edge too. You don't get to be a front rower in Leicester without having a nasty edge. But, you know, really nice guys, but they can also get people to believe in the project quite clearly. And I think what they've done is they've got the right people in around them as well. They've been really good at doing that. What that tells me is that they can instill belief in people to come on the project and think that they're going to be successful. And if you think like how, like Leamy leaving, you know, that was a brilliant coup to get. Now, I think maybe Leamy always thinks he's probably going back and wants to be closer to home maybe, but I still think he could have easily been settled in Leinster. And you know, that's a place where you could see yourself having belief and really, you know, enhancing your CV, you know, and it gives you options to go anywhere for the, probably if you've been at Leinster. So going to Munster was probably a big call, even though it's going home and it's where the heart is for him. So he was able to do that. Prendergast obviously is a brilliant bit of business, you know, bringing him home as well. But he must have been able to sell that project pretty good, you know, so to keep all these guys around him. And I think that's been the key for him, is that he's had good people there. The players like him. Like, I think that's really important, because if you're good, if you're anyway good and the players like you, you know, then it's just about having a vision and getting everyone to move in the same direction. And, you know, he's been brave all year. There's been some tough days out for him, and I think he's still gone out in front of the media. You could see he was hurting. But it was so good to see the relief coming over his face. And it's always nice to see one for the good guys, if you know what I mean. He is one of those people you'd want him to do well. And that's been the most pleasing aspect of this for me, is seeing someone that I know who is a good guy, but I didn't know how good a coach he was, because I just, what do I know about scrums? But I knew he was a good guy.
What I also think has been really important as well, and it reminds me of when Andy Farrell took over from Joe Schmidt. Like, Andy Farrell had a front row seat for things that didn't quite go well, that didn't quite work. And I think Graham Rowntree had a similar thing with Johan van Graan, whereas, you know, it's easy kind of to, I think some people might have been going, well, they absolutely were for Andy Farrell, that it's a bit too close to home. It's going to be a continuation of Joe Schmidt, where absolutely it hasn't been, you know. And I think that's been very similar to Graham Rowntree, for all the reasons that I outlined earlier in terms of the game plan, trusting the younger players. I think he saw what didn't work, so he took the good parts of what was there under Johan van Graan, but he's put his own stamp on it. And like you said, he's got good guys around him and facilitated them, allowed them to go and put their own stamp on things as well. So I think that that's been really important.
And I think as well, to tie in with that point, Keane, I think the concern always was that because it didn't seem like Munster had gotten any closer really to getting back to where they were, that it was more concerning than the Joe Schmidt and Andy Farrell one, because tweaks always felt like the right way to go with the Joe thing. Because look, Leinster, like Ireland had been unbelievably successful with Joe, even though a very disappointing World Cup, they had been really, really successful under him. So that always felt like tweaks were probably appropriate. Whereas with Munster, I think the concern at the start was that hiring someone from who's been in the setup there is like, do we need more? Do we need a bigger change? And it probably just shows you that even if you think you're far away, you're probably never as far away as you think. And adding a few choice pieces into the setup, having your own views, and as you say, seeing what maybe, I think maybe what's been very important and probably was a big concern about, you know, hiring someone who had been in the setup, was that the selection policies and realizing that there needed to be a change there. And like, they just had no trust in what was coming behind, but quite clearly there's still plenty of homegrown talent there in Munster that they can rely on and that can deliver on a big stage, but had never got enough consistent opportunities. And he was brave enough to stick with those guys all the way through and go out in front of the media after some of their tough days and take it on the chin and take the pressure off them. And put the pressure on when it was appropriate as well, knowing that they needed to be better and could be better. So it's been a really impressive year for him, Will. And Cian, I think the Munster supporters, I always felt, and you'll know this from what I was talking about him all the way through, Will, is that he's a good guy. I think he suits Munster well. He's kind of a humble guy. I think he'll go down well. You know, if you think about the Munster attitude and what makes it such a great club, is that it's a family club. You know, lots of people go to, or like our kind of religious supporters will be in Thomond Park, even through thick and thin, and Musgrave Park, Independent Park. I better make sure I say that here, actually. I think he's the perfect guy for that. He comes from that over in Leicester as well. He'll know, like, I always think those two clubs are very, very similar, as I think Leinster are similar to them as well. And, yeah, I think he really would have bought into that, and I think he'd be a good personality for Munster. So it'll be interesting to see what comes next year for him. Like, you know, the World Cup was obviously a little bit of, you know, it does interrupt things, but it probably doesn't interrupt things as much for him as it does for, say, Leinster. So he might be able to really, you know, capitalise on these gains and build in some kind of nice foundations to kick on next season. So we wait and see on that. I think that's going to be the big challenge for him now. Can he do that? Can this coaching team, can this Munster squad, can they kick on?
It also makes me think that the last couple of years were a huge missed opportunity. Like, I know, I'm not just saying this because they won the league at the weekend. As I said, even if they had lost, I was really impressed with how they were progressing, the way they were playing, what they were building. It just felt like every year was Groundhog Day in this podcast. Keane, I mentioned at the start, the first time you were coming on for like a pod. I feel like every year ended the same. And as you said, they weren't getting any closer. The selection policy, the style of play. Johan Graham was there for 4.5 years. Like, I felt like after 2.5 years, he probably had a pretty good idea what he brought to the party and what he didn't. And I'm not just saying this, as I said, because Munster now won the league and I'm saying, oh, they should have got rid of him a lot sooner. But I think people were saying this at the time. Like, I think they were crying out for a change long before that. And it just makes me feel like the squad that they had, you know, weren't best served like that with the new voices, with Mike Prendergast coming in. Now, in fairness, Stephen Larkin, when he was appointed, people thought that would be good. It just never really clicked for whatever reason. But it just makes me feel like this could have kickstarted 2 years ago and they would have been in a much better place.
Well, like, it's probably worth remembering that if Johan van Graan hadn't triggered his release clause, he'd still be the Munster head coach. Like, you know, that's not to bring the mood down, but that's the reality of the situation. So Munster were probably a bit fortunate, really, that he did that. Bath came along with a wheelbarrow full of cash and said, come over here and live in, what did he call it, a true rugby city, which I know didn't really go down well in Limerick. But like, that was a blessing in disguise for Munster, you'd have to say, really. So it does feel like the last couple of years were a bit wasted. But look, in year one of the Roundtree project, you can't say that he hasn't built on some of the foundations that have been there. And to be fair, look, I don't think Johan van Graan was the right fit for Munster, but he was a decent fella, and like, he did put his heart and soul into Munster, but it just didn't work out. And obviously you'd wish him well in going to Bath. You know, he obviously was there this season, but they're looking to rebuild next season. But to bring it back to Munster, like, you know, we're talking about what happens next, and we're talking about the Champions Cup, and, you know, they've done unbelievably well, because I would be the first to put my hand up and admit that I didn't think that Munster were going to win anything until they addressed their front row issues in particular. And I think just a tip of the hat to Jeremy Lochman, Dermot Barron, like Stephen Archer, who Luke has touched on.
Archer was unbelievable. He was unbelievable against Leinster as well.
Yeah, he's been pretty good.
I don't think I've seen him have a better game than he had against Leinster. He was, and the final, he was unbelievable.
He played back-to-back 80 minutes on the previous trip to South Africa as well, when he was just back from injury. So, look, I think that's unbelievable and fair play. John Ryan is coming back from New Zealand at the end of the season, or during the summer, I should say. But they're not the future. And I do think, you know, Munster, people behind the scenes, whoever making the decisions, can't lose sight of the fact that I still think they need reinforcements in that front row, that the winning the URC can't kind of paper over whatever cracks there are. So
Barron actually looked like a bit of a, he was brilliant on the weekend, I thought, you know, and I think
very good. Very good.
But no, that was a nice little find.
Your tight head situation, though, isn't the most ideal in terms of the age profile. Like, Keenan Knox just seems to have fallen off this season, and Roman Salanoa kind of feels like you're constantly waiting for him to come through, even though he did have a couple of decent cameos. So look, I just think if Munster, I agree with Luke, made the point that they should be talking about Heineken Cups going into next season. If that is the case, then I do still think they need a couple of more players. Whether or not they're going to be able to get them in this summer in terms of budgets and all that, we'll have to wait and see. But I do still think, in particular, the front row is an area that they probably need to look at going forward if they want to get back to winning Heineken Cups.
And one of the points you made at the start, like that first Leinster-Munster fixture next year is going to be very, very tasty. I'm already looking forward to
it won't be Stevensdale, it'll be in October. Yeah, I'd say Leinster will have a strong team out for that one.
Yeah, I suspect. Let's move on to the Ireland squad then, Luke. I know there's a lot of kind of crossover between some of the Munster guys who maybe didn't get picked. Andy Farrell named 42 players today. A little smaller, I think, than some people had suspected, for the training squad. You know, some people who didn't make it that maybe people thought might. Robert Balakoon missed out. No Joey Carberry, John Klein, Jeremy Lachman, Jordan Larmer, John Hodnett, Shane Daly, among fellas who were on the outside looking in. What did you make of it?
Yeah, a few of them were a bit odd, weren't they? I mean, I thought that the Treadwell one was probably the most surprising, I thought definitely deserved, off the back of his finish to the season, to at least be in that squad, particularly when you think of how Ulster finished their season, so that was a bit of a surprise. I think everyone else, I could kind of understand it. I think that Larmer's push was probably a little bit too late. I think he's still unlucky. And I was disappointed for him. I think he's come back into some form, Will, and he is dangerous. He does give you something different, but I don't know if he has a realistic chance of getting in there. I think Stockdale is very surprising ahead of even Balakoon, but definitely ahead of Larmer too. I don't think he deserves to be in there really, based on his form. I just haven't seen enough out of him, but he probably gets in on, just his pure physicality. I'm sure Andy Farrell likes that. Like, he's a very big man and he's very quick. I thought that was a bit surprising. I was a little bit, I thought Daly, Shane Daly was, can definitely be a little bit disappointed as well. That's probably another body who you're kind of thinking, God, that was a good finish to the season. Maybe it might even be worth seeing how he trains for the first couple of weeks, but clearly he must be quite far away from Andy Farrell's thoughts. I mean, he's obviously not bringing people in for the sake of bringing them in, which, look, I can see the value in that. And I think as well, the province's training in the summer is brilliant too. Like, it's really, really good. Like, the training in Ireland is very, very high level. So I think he can still, this isn't the end for everyone who hasn't been selected. I think there generally is someone who might come from quite far away, maybe if there's a few injuries in a certain area, who could come in. But he's obviously picked people, or hasn't picked people, who he thinks are just too far away to make it in. And maybe he thinks Klein's style of play just doesn't suit how fast they want to play. That's the only thing I can think of with picking Treadwell ahead of him, and maybe the New Zealand tour played a part in that. But that seems like a long time ago, Will, to be picking Treadwell on that form. So everyone else, I think, probably isn't that much of a surprise, is it? I think it's a strong team, isn't it? We've actually I look at that there and look at the squad. Very, very impressive. Lots of people playing well, lots of people who will be pushing for starting berths. And I don't think there's many places, probably four or five in that team, which are really locked down. Everywhere else, you're kind of thinking, someone could have a bolter, someone could have, and if the person who has started the last game, goes down, there is really, really good backup behind them. Like, it's a deep squad. Like, I think this team has a chance, if they can hit the ground running, which is going to be the big challenge, having not really played many competitive games versus, say, the Southern Hemisphere teams, who probably play some competitive rugby a lot sooner or a lot closer to the World Cup. That's always the big advantage for them, I think, with a World Cup at this stage of the year. That's going to be the challenge. Can they hit the ground running and continue that form that they showed in the Six Nations? But there's certainly lots of depth in there, and they're a team that everyone, I think, will fear. I don't think anyone will want to come up against the Ireland team. They're playing great rugby, and even though Leinster didn't win the Heineken Cup, they came bloody close without playing that great for about 60 minutes. So they're still pretty formidable, and obviously Munster won the URC, so they'll be brimming with confidence. Lots of players who've just had success recently, and that's always something that you want to have coming into a big tournament.
Yeah, it's a lot always said that Andy Farrell doesn't hand out cheap caps, and he hasn't really handed out many cheap places in the training squad either, like keeping it quite tight. Like, I think a lot of people were expecting it to be maybe 43, 44, maybe even 45 players. And if you actually go through the squad, 33 players end up going. There's probably about 26 or 27 who are almost nailed on just from previous squads. So you're kind of just debating the fringe players who might not make a huge impact at a World Cup realistically, but it's still kind of a fun debate to have. And Keane, like, Luke mentioned a few guys there. Like, if I'm Shane Daly today, I'm thinking I'm starting ahead of Keith Earls week in, week out. I'm playing great rugby. We just won the league. And yet I'm on the outside looking in, and I know Keith Earls is, Like, if Kedirels isn't on 98 caps, is he included in that squad? I don't know if he would be. Like, I feel like this is kind of a bit of a sentimental call. Like, I don't see him form-wise this season. I know he's had injuries, but I don't know. I don't know about that one either.
If he, say he gets back to full fitness, is he a guy that you'd be thinking, like, he still has the pace? That's always the thing at his age. Everything else is... Oh, sorry to interrupt. What do you think, Keane?
No, I don't think it's sentimental whatsoever, to be honest. I think Shane Daly can feel hard done by, but I think we saw the value of Keith Earls even in the semi-final against Leinster. He came off the bench last weekend and had a really good impact as well. I think back to New Zealand last summer, and you know, he captained the second midweek game. He's a really important figure in the squad. He scored the try, of course, in the first test, having played, what was it, 3 or 4 days earlier in the first Maori All Blacks game as well. So he's a really important figure in the squad, Will. I wouldn't be writing him off at all. I even see today Mike Prendergast potentially talking about Keith Earls playing on until next season with Munster. I don't know if that would be the case, because I think he's had the fitting send-off that he probably deserved in terms of his Munster career. But yeah, I wouldn't agree that it's sentimental whatsoever. I think he's there because he's been a valued member of the squad for so many years. I still think he's got plenty to offer. And in terms of Shane Daly, he's actually, like, the irony of him being left out is he's actually like the prototype Andy Farrell winger. Like, he reminds me quite a bit of Mac Hansen, the way he drifts in off his wing. He gets involved. He's a really good playmaker. He used to play in the centre. He's played a bit of fullback. He has that sevens background as well. I think he's been one of the most improved players this season. But obviously, Calvin Nash is one of the four uncapped players, and he's very similar to him. So he's probably gotten in there ahead of him, and Shane Daly has been capped before as well. So I think you can definitely make the case for, and Luke has done it for several guys there, but I don't think you could say much of it is surprising, really. You're right,
Balakoon,
Will.
Robert Balakoon a bit unlucky. Like, I feel like Balakoon, I know he's had an injury hit season, his form wasn't great, but like,
he's paid the price, Will, for Ulster's non-existent attack, is what I would say. Like, Ulster are, like, everything about them is based around the maul. I'd be so frustrated if I was an outside back in that Ulster team. I think that the Ulster attack has gone stale.
But he was the only guy that looked like a threat there, Keane. Like, if you think about that match against Connacht,
Stockdale is in the
Stockdale
squad.
Has been, like, yeah, that Stockdale seemed like a mad one to me ahead of Balakoon, particularly when, if you just think about just pure danger, like, the Balakoon break was what got Ulster back into that game at the end, and you know, had them pushing that the Connacht team having been pretty, you know, toothless for most of the game. Whereas, yeah, the Stockdale one baffles me, to be honest.
I think he's gone Stockdale because he's a like-for-like replacement, well, as close to it as for James Lowe in terms of that left boot and stuff. Even though if James Lowe was out, you'd imagine Jimmy O'Brien would slot in there. But I agree on Balakoon. I think, like, I actually thought... that I was having a conversation a few months ago, and I actually thought come the start of the World Cup, this is going back a while, that Robert Balakoon could probably be one of Ireland's starting wingers. Like, he's that good. But and I agree, he has been dangerous, but over the course of the season, Ulster just haven't used him enough. And it was jarring to see in that Connacht game, because you can see what threat, and everyone knows what threat he offers, but their game plan just hasn't been built around getting guys like him involved. Like, you think of back to James Hume. I mean, people were talking about him potentially challenging Gary Ringrose for his position a year ago, and he's fallen off the face of the earth now as well. He's nowhere near the squad, you'd have to say. So look, I'd imagine guys like Balakoon and Larmer have been put on the standby list. Obviously, we're not privy to what that is, but I'd have no doubt that a good chunk of lads are being told to stay fit, keep your phone on. Like, the World Cup being on in France is obviously not like Japan. You know, guys can come in and out far, far easier than was the case 4 years ago. So while it's definitely possible that someone not in the 42-man squad could still make it in, it is a long way back, you'd have to say. And I agree with what your point, Will. I think if everyone is fit, the majority of that 33-man squad, which I think will be picked on August 28th, is fairly set in stone. Obviously, there's scope for one or two, three lads to make it in, but I think the majority of it is already picked in Andy Farrell's head. And look, that's no bad thing. That's coming off the back of Ireland winning a Grand Slam. You know, if Ireland had a disastrous Six Nations, like take Wales, for example, I think they have a 54-man training squad because they don't know their left from their right. Like, they're really scratching around trying to find...
Any thoughts, by the way? Sorry, I know this is a real left field, but what about the two guys retiring?
Jones, yeah.
Is that did that sound like bad blood, or That was weird,
very,
no?
Very strange. One after another in a Friday afternoon.
Yeah. Do you reckon Gatland rang them up and said, listen, sorry, lads, not for you?
That's what I presume, that he told them they weren't coming.
Took them out the back and the tent came out and the bullet, he put the bullet in the head.
That's what it sounds like, doesn't it? But this is what I mean. Like, Wales, like, don't really know what they're doing. You know, 54 players in a training squad, whereas Ireland have gone 42 because I think they're confident and comfortable in who they have at their disposal. And that's no bad thing either, Will, because like you said, he doesn't hand out cheap caps. He doesn't want to hand out cheap places. So you'd absolutely rather be in Ireland's place. What is it, 100 days, I think, now out from the start of the World Cup, rather than Wales trying to find what they're doing, really, you know?
One thing that does jump out looking at that squad, Luke, is that, like, at fullback, like, if Hugo Keenan was to get injured, there's no, like, out-and-out fullback. Like, just people keep saying Matt Hanson is the second fullback, Matt Hanson this, Matt Hanson that. And, like, maybe he is. Jimmy O'Brien can play a lot of positions.
Jimmy O'Brien is definitely.
But, like, that's a huge area, I would say, that Ireland could be exposed in, given how reliant they've been on Keenan, given how many starts he's gotten in Ronnie Farrell, and given how little other fullbacks have played. And even at fullback, Jimmy O'Brien hasn't, I know he can play there, but he doesn't really play there that often for Leinster anymore.
No, he doesn't, you're right, but I think he's a really good player. I really like him, and I think he could play, he could fit in. He looks like a big match player too. He's got a good mentality, you know, he's quite calm, he's a nice ball player. He's not going to be like for like with Keenan, but he's pretty damn good, I think. You could also put Lowe in there if you were stuck. If, say, you went, you know, if your two outside back subs went down, if you had an absolute nightmare and you were down to your third and you had to play someone, you know, you can move him back there. You can move Henshaw back there. There is options for this team. You could move Ringrose to the wing, or you could move
But all of those, like, options are very, I would say, disruptive.
No, I'm talking about a last ditch scenario. But my like for like would definitely be Jimmy O'Brien. I think I think he's got the pace. I think he can, you know, they need a ball player for this game plan. And I like O'Brien. I rate him highly enough to think that it's not going to be the same as Keenan, but Keenan's one of the best players, you know. Yeah, I think Keenan's one of the best players in the world, actually. I think he's brilliant. I think Keenan's class. He didn't show much at the end of the season, I don't think, but during the Six Nations, he talked about his tackling. It was interesting. I think his tackling was unbelievable in the Six Nations, and it was the last thing that I was a little bit concerned about with him. Everything else, his kicking, his positioning, his ability to release his wingers, his fitness, just his general fitness. He seems to be in the right place at the right time. Kind of a bit like a Beauden Barrett for me. Seems to be the guy at the end of a long play who's making he's outpacing the opposition winger after a scrappy ball kick through. He's the guy that touches it down. He's a key player for Ireland. But I think Jimmy O'Brien is pretty close to that. And I think we'd be okay if he went down. We wouldn't be the same, but we'd be okay.
Just on a similar team to that, I think the backup to Josh van der Fleer is very, very interesting because, okay, you know that Peter O'Mahony can go and play seven, but I'm kind of thinking of the Romania and the Tonga game. Like, if Josh van der Fleer isn't playing and you don't want your first choice back row to be playing, then that means that Caelan Doris, who can obviously play seven as well, isn't going to be playing. Peter O'Mahony isn't going to be playing because they might want him to be resting him for the South Africa game. So I'm kind of looking at the squad there and I'm going, who's playing open side if your first choice back row are sitting it out? And I don't see anyone obvious there. I don't know what you guys
think. Byrne.
But again, he's your first choice lock. So I don't see who's your open side in that squad.
Yeah, but he doesn't have to be your first choice lock, and you've got Baird as well, you know, to fill in that six role. So I think O'Mahony does become that seven.
Game like Romania, like when he's on. But
I think there's something to learn from this. This finish to the season that Munster had. I think you've got to be really careful about resting too many guys, because remember, the Northern Hemisphere teams are going to have to play themselves into some form. They're going to have to do that. They're just not going to have played a competitive match in quite a while before this. I know they've got the warm-ups, but they're just, everyone's shagged in those ones. They're, you know, it's your first run, and no matter how fit you are, you're just going to be tired. They're going to be scrappy games. I don't know. I would be cautious about complete wholesale changes. I think they're better off maybe playing a few guys again in that one, depending on who hasn't played themselves into form or who's not playing well. You might actually end up having to play someone in that game and take a risk with an injury, would be my view. So I'd be cautious about saying, you know, wholesale changes. Think about how Munster finished this thing up here, lads. I think there's a lesson there compared to what Leinster did, where their guys were coming in cold. Now, Ireland traditionally have done the other way. But Ireland have traditionally done that at the World Cup, and it hasn't paid off for us, I don't think. I think you're better off maybe playing guys a little bit earlier and playing them more. Won't be a popular thing to say, but
it's a fair point. No, it absolutely is.
Anything that's different from other World Cups is something worth exploring.
you're saying yes, yes. I honestly think there is something in that, guys. I've been giving this a bit of thought the last while.
And Andy Farrell, I remember, was it the 2021 November, they played Japan, New Zealand, and Argentina. I think he went with basically the same team all 3 weeks, which is unusual for November. He has kind of done stuff like that before. So, yeah, it's Andy Farrell's first World Cup as a head coach too. And given the kind of little tweaks, as you said, Luke, he's made to how he's prepared the team, it'll be interesting to see, having been at one World Cup with Ireland as an assistant, one with England as an assistant, both of which went terribly, you'd have to say, what he does now as the head man.
You can use the 50-minute mark, the 55-minute mark, Will. You can kind of get going. You know, that doesn't completely knacker you, you know, that kind of way. Look, you can't completely manage people away from injuries. Like, I think Sexton's the only guy, I think. Look, just given his age and his injury profile, he'll be coming back. You got to be cautious with him. And he's proven that he can come back in cold, like, consistently. But everyone else, I don't know. I'd just be a little bit worried about wrapping people in cotton wool. I think you want to be battle-hardened if you're coming into those weeks. Just stay off the feet in the training week. You prepare. This team know that they'll have so long together that they'll know the game plan inside out. It's actually just having the feel of the game and the game fitness, I think, to deliver it in the key moments will probably be more important for the Northern Hemisphere teams. Sorry to interrupt you, Will. I just thought it was an important point to make.
There is that rest week built into the World Cup as well. For the first time, teams will have like a full week off. So for Ireland, it's Romania, Tonga, which I can't remember the order. Romania, Tonga, South Africa, break week, Scotland, then into the knockout stages if Ireland get that far. So that'll be another maybe time to get some downtime or to plan around. Just before we finish up, guys, last question I want to ask both of you. And since it's 100 days out to the tournament, it ties in beautifully. Very early World Cup prediction for Ireland, Keane. The training squad has been named. We can revisit predictions later on before the World Cup, before the next game. But what's your gut feeling telling you now, you know, after watching how the season unfolded, seeing the training squad, as we kind of go off on our metaphorical podcast holidays, how do you think Ireland will do? Do you think they'll finally get past the quarterfinal?
Ireland going all the way.
Oh, love it. Love it.
I was going to say, that's not what you said to me outside the studio last week.
No, look. Yeah,
that was off the record, Will. My gut still tells me, like this is the hardest draw Ireland have ever had in terms of if they get to the quarterfinal, they're going to be playing New Zealand or France. And I totally agree, and I've made this point before, totally agree with what Luke has made the point about the rugby championship. And I feel like people forget that the rugby championship is going to dominate over the next couple of months in terms of the summer. And so much of what people see the World Cup is going to be viewed through what happened in the rugby championship, because all of a sudden the Grand Slam feels like even longer ago. So my point is, I guess, like a lot of people are kind of writing off New Zealand now, which is a dangerous kind of thing to do, but they have a rugby championship to play themselves back into form. I know it's not a vintage squad, but still wouldn't fancy your chances coming up against them in the World Cup quarterfinal. So look, I would love to say Ireland to get past the quarterfinal, but I still see it as being very, very difficult. I can imagine some casualties being coming into account in terms of after that South Africa game in the pool. I know they have a week off, but that could be a really damaging game in terms of losing bodies. You'd hope not, but hopefully they can get past the quarterfinal, but like it's going to be so, so tough.
So that's a no from you, Luke.
Ireland to win the World Cup, like I said, Will.
I was wondering, would I go out of character and be quite bullish?
Just be careful in case you haven't, if you said something to Will off the record, because he'll out you.
I've kind of been saying for the last year and a half that we won't get by the quarterfinal, but I think we will. I think we will. And I just hope that Ireland, if they do that, if they get past that quarterfinal, I think it's on for them. I hope they don't build that up too much, kind of a la Leinster and La Rochelle, where they just blow themselves out in the first 25 minutes and they got nothing left.
I would be concerned after watching what I watched in the Aviva 2 weeks ago. Like, that would be a major concern about how they rock up mentally for a quarterfinal.
Yeah. Well, I think they can do it. Like, Munster have showed it. There's enough, you know, experienced guys from Munster who delivered under pressure. Leinster have done it previously with loads of guys too. So I just think they probably overdid it for La Rochelle. It's a kind of a weird fixture for Leinster now. It's become a real bogey fixture for them. And also they're brilliant. So we always got to remember that. Like, we're writing off Ross Byrne and all these things as well. Like, La Rochelle are unbelievable. Like, they're a brilliant rugby team. So, you know, let's be cautious on that one too. I'm going to say Ireland get past. I hate predicting these things so hard, but I think Ireland go to the final. I think Ireland go to the final. I'm going to say Ireland to win. I think they've got enough good subs.
Win the World Cup.
I think Ireland are going to win the World Cup. I was worried about Tadhg Furlong. I think you know me. I'm always the doomsday. Will. I rarely have a positive prediction. But you think about the Ireland team, like. Finley Beelam is playing brilliant. Tighthead's not a concern anymore. Keane Healy, I still think there's legs in him. I thought that was a mistake not to play him against Munster. I thought he made a big impact when he came on. It's not going to be the same as Porter, but I'm not as concerned about that. Hooker, we're very strong. If Henderson gets back fit, we're strong in the row. We've got loads of options in the back row. I love what I'm seeing from... I thought Ross Byrne, look, the final, he got a lot of flack for, but that was a tricky last 60 minutes. If anyone watched that properly as a back who knows what's going on, his options were completely depleted. He was under pressure. His pack were going backwards. At the end of the game, he got a lot of flack for it. But I actually thought, if you look back in it, the opportunity didn't really present itself. But leaving that aside, I thought Crowley looked brilliant. So if that doesn't work out, he looks class and he looks like he's built for the big stage. We've options in the center.
Conor Murray is playing brilliant as well, Luke.
Conor Murray's playing very well. Yeah. I think we've got enough backup. I just think it's whether they can deliver the game plan.
It's funny, like, you know, you say win the World Cup, we all laugh. But if you did like a blind taste test, covered the names of the team, and if you were just looking at it like, if you weren't Irish and just kind of objectively going through the teams, after what Ireland have achieved in the squad they have, you would be thinking this team... Why couldn't they go and win a World Cup?
The two teams that worry me with Ireland, New Zealand are always a threat, but I still think if you look at the names on a team sheet, it's still France at home. It's still South Africa with a full contingent. They're the ones that worry you. And South Africa and France are the most similar to La Rochelle. And Leinster, you know, do make up the body of, you know, a good portion of this Ireland team. So, They're the main concerns. I think if it's a fast-paced game, I don't think anyone will want to play Ireland in a fast-paced game. I think they might be slightly better than New Zealand. Sorry, New Zealand only know how to play that. That's how they play rugby. But I think that plays into Ireland's hands now, which it never has against a New Zealand team. I think if it's a fast-paced game, Ireland actually probably have more weapons than them. Maybe not the athletes, but definitely more weapons. The pack is better suited to throwing the ball around and are super, super fit. Biggest challenge for them is, can they get match fit quickly and battle Ireland? I think.
Well, my 100-day prediction is Ireland to get to the final as well. So it's 2-1.
Is it? Brilliant. What happens in the final, though? Like, you can't just say gets to the final.
Why not? I've said the win. That's what I was reading. I was wondering if they could go the whole way. I think they could beat England. It's probably England, isn't it?
If Ireland win and get to a final, and if they're playing France in the Stade of France, and Jacko Piper's the referee, God, I just say, who knows what's going to happen? Like, I'm going to see him.
Don't even bother watching.
it's set up to be an unbelievable couple of months. Obviously, it's going to be a bit of downtime now in the World Cup warm start. The squad is announced off to France then for the pools and then hopefully into the knockouts. But for now, we're going to take a little bit of a sabbatical for the next while. I'd like to thank Luke and Keane for joining me tonight and across the season. Thanks to all the guests who joined us as well. We'll be back later on in the summer, looking ahead to the World Cup warm-up games in the meantime. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or listen to independent.ie. So until next time, thanks for listening and goodbye.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.